Kia ora and welcome to Sobriety Chat. My name is Lotta Dan, otherwise known as Mrs. D. I am the community manager and content creator here at Living Sober. And today I am joined by Sue Kerr. Now, Sue is a writer. She's well known by the members at Living Sober. She is an artist, a gardener, a seamstress, and a budding astrologer. She's a wife, a friend, my friend, and a big sister. And she is sober. Welcome, Sue.
Thanks, Lotta.
Lovely to see you. How sober are you?
Well, as luck would have it, I'm 10 years sober. Last Friday, I had my 10-year soberversary.
Amazing. And how did that go? How did that feel?
Well, it felt like I still can't really wrap my head around it. You know, I cannot believe I've had a whole decade without drinking. I mean, I do feel totally different than when I was drinking, but wow. There was a time when I would never have even been able to do 10 days without drinking, so 10 years just, whoa.
Yeah, I mean, I want to go back and ask about that in a minute, but just on the soberversary thing, because, you know, a lot of our members are in those early stages where 10 days, 100 days, 1 year, you know, these are huge milestones, but sometimes the actual... You build up to the milestone, and then when it arrives, it's a little bit weird, isn't it? Did you find that it's like special but kind of ordinary and deflating but amazing and just a combo?
Personally, I was totally elated, and I really wanted like a badge and a parade and some fireworks and all of that stuff. And in reality, I had a very ordinary day because I'm not really around a lot of people that are that are sober or appreciate what it means to me. And to me, actually what I ended up doing on my soberversary was working behind a bar at a jazz concert. So that was really ironic. At the beginning, I'm like, I'm not doing that. It's my soberversary. I'm going to do something else. And then I'm like, get over yourself. It's a day and it's a place of service for me to be there. So to volunteer for this cultural group. So I just went, and that's what I did on my soberversary. I didn't get a badge, but man, did I feel good in myself. And that's really what my whole sober journey's been about. It's been about what's going on inside here.
So what was, if we could go back to 10 years ago or over 10 years ago, if we think about that last year of drinking, what was going on inside that kind of got you to change?
I got in touch with this sense of, what's the word? It's escaping me now. Disintegration. I wasn't integrated. Like, I had always been a seeker of, you know, even since I was a kid, I was like, what's the meaning of life? Why are we here? Like, what are we doing? I was going to school going, what is this all about? Going to church. This can't be true. You know, so I was always looking for meaning in my life. And I was a meditator. I was doing yoga. I was doing yoga teacher training. I was reading all sorts of, you know, Joseph Campbell and Carl Jung and all of that stuff. And I was knocking back the drinks at the same time. So I didn't have any integrity between what I was doing and what I was knowing. And I kind of ran out of excuses. I did everything, you know, like I did everything to avoid stopping drinking because I really enjoyed drinking and I didn't really know that it was possible not to. But it got to the point where I knew that there was no way I was going to make any progress or any advances on my personal journey, which was very important to me. It had been a lifelong thing. I was never going to make any progress if I didn't stop drinking.
So that's really interesting. So you were aware that the drinking was kind of disconnecting you from that kind of bigger meaning or that authentic living or whatever. Because my experience was I was unaware that's what my drinking was doing to me. I just thought I was a party girl whose habit had got out of control. But the way you're describing it sounds like you knew that it was standing in the way of you having that integration, as you put it. So brilliant.
Yeah, in the last year, I definitely knew that. I mean, the last 12 months of my drinking, I was doing yoga teacher training. So I was kind of like I was immersed in this really kind of healthy lifestyle world, and I was teaching other people about using their bodies and, you know, and the energy and all of that stuff. And I was studying spiritual things, and I was learning to, I was trying to teach myself to meditate. But you just cannot be, you can't do that and drink the way I was drinking. I mean, some people manage to do that and drink a little bit occasionally. But I knew, I mean, I was never an occasional drinker. I was always pretty full on. So I had these two sides to me. And I wasn't what you would call a party girl. If I drank, I drank at home, pretty much. And it was almost like the, you know, I would go to a full day yoga teacher training workshop, for example, and I would, you know, get involved in that and do that. And then by the end of it, I was feeling like so vulnerable and so maybe close to what I wanted. And then I would just run home and open the fridge and have a few wines just to kind of turn it down, because I didn't know what was going to happen if I just let these things kind of mature and happen. So I kind of drank almost to sabotage myself on this journey I was on. I wasn't really aware of doing that, but there did come a point where I just knew I can't do this anymore. Like, I got to do one or the other, but both just did. There was no room in me for both of those scenarios. And I knew really, I really wanted to be that person who could sit still and look serene and meditate, even though I couldn't at the time. I really wanted to be that person. I didn't want to be the person sitting in front of TV, slugging back wine, watching Downton Abbey and forgetting what happened. You know,
but when you came to that point of I you know, I can't do this anymore, how scary was that, and how did that go with the quitting part?
Well, I'd had plenty of practice, Lotta. You know, I mean, I've probably quit drinking, I don't know, 100 times. Like, I had done it many times. This time I'd had quite a big day of drinking the day before, so I woke up in the morning and I was just sort of feeling ratchet, and I realized that I drank more than I wanted to, and I could see it. And it was the first day of a 40-day yoga practice. I was doing these 40-day sadhana practices. So I just said to myself, how about we just try 40 days of yoga, 40 days of no drinking. Let's just do that. So I picked, I'd never really intended that day to stop drinking altogether. I just said, let's just do this one thing. And about 2 days into that, I was good on 2 days. I just remember sitting at my desk and I was wondering, I wonder if there's any sort of information about this online, like, you know, is there anyone else who feels like this? So I just sort of did a Google search and I found the world of sober blogging, and that's when I found your blog and a bunch of other blogs. And suddenly I realized, oh, wow, I could do this forever. These people are doing this forever. And look, I'm not the only one going through this horrible feeling of like up and down and drinking and not drinking. And so that really, in a way, I think that's what saved me, like realizing I wasn't on my own and it's possible. It's possible to not drink and have a great life.
Because let's be honest, 10 years ago, there wasn't that much noise around sobriety. There weren't that many people being open about it. No. Even in 10 years, it has changed massively. When we did it, we were even more heroic. I mean, anyone who gets sober is a hero. But, totally. You know, to do it at a time when, yes, you did feel really alone and weird and kind of isolated with it, that connection. I mean, it's still powerful today to connect with people, but really, really powerful, connecting and knowing I'm not alone. There's other people in this position.
Yeah. And I think like you, I thought that the only thing to do if you had a drinking problem was to go to AA. And there was no way I was going to do that because I just know that it wouldn't work for me. Or maybe it would work for me, but I just wasn't going to go there. So I wasn't really admitting that I was addicted. I just wanted to have a different lifestyle. You know, that was my story to myself. And so, yeah, there was nothing else. I didn't know anything else. I hadn't realized there were books written about it. And then when I discovered the blogs, you know, that's really when it all opened up for me.
That's so amazing. And so you've said to me before, and you said it when we were setting up for this chat, that from the outside people might not notice anything majorly different between the you then and the you now.
Yeah.
But it's the inside stuff that's changed so dramatically. Can you articulate what it is? I mean, I know it's a lot, but what's actually shifted for you since you put down the drink?
I don't feel I'm not down on myself. I don't feel disappointed in myself anymore. I don't feel remorseful. I don't feel like I think when I was drinking towards the end, I was just feeling really uncomfortable about everything. And now I feel confident. I feel comfortable in myself. I think when I was drinking too, I was really worried about, you know, it was part of my identity. My family drank. Everything was around drinking. All my friendships were around drinking. Like, not drinking was this sort of rebellious thing. It was like rejecting everything that my family and my friendships and everything kind of stood for. I mean, that might sound a bit dramatic, but not drinking was an act of rebellion.
But it's the ultimate rebellion in this society. Yeah. That basically, we often say alcohol is the only drug you're judged for not drinking. To say, exactly, I'm not doing that anymore is a hugely rebellious act.
Yeah. So, you know, for me, it was a matter of really kind of building over. I mean, it was a slow and hard process. But just this week in preparation for this talk, I got out my journals that I wrote. I wrote a journal every day for the first couple of years. And right on day one, I decided, I don't know where this came from, but I decided I was going to write down something I was grateful for about not drinking and about sticking to my yoga practice. And, you know, for a whole year, I have these two books, and every single journal entry starts with the word grateful. Like, grateful for waking up without a headache, grateful for feeling good about myself, grateful, you know. And so this whole concept of having a life that I felt good about myself, I felt good about my life, I sort of like removed the rub point that was just wrecking everything and ruining my integrity. And I feel like I'm integrated now. I feel like how I look and how I act and what I do when I'm alone and when I'm with people is all the same thing. It's like this integrated
I love that
person.
Integration. I don't use that a lot when I talk and write about sobriety. I use authentic and grounded, but integrated is really powerful because it's layers, isn't it? And it's, you're right, it's the interior matching the exterior.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, do I look, does my life look the way my life actually is? And the answer is yes, but before it didn't. And that goes back to your point, you know, when you were saying how I've always said I wasn't a dramatic drinker. Like, people who knew me when they knew I'd quit, they're like, you, what are you quitting for? I drink way more than you do. You know, I didn't have drama around my drinking, but personally I wasn't happy with it. And that was enough for me. You know, I don't need any other reasons. I don't need to get put in jail or crash a car or do anything like that. But now I feel like, yeah, what you see with me is not what you get. You don't see this person who's got a business and out there in the world looking fine and, you know, got nice relationships and all of that stuff and then going home and like knocking back the drinks. I don't do that. So I look and feel the same as I actually am.
And that oozes out of people, I think, in recovery. You do just get that sense of being with someone that sort of integrated groundedness, which is so lovely. But hey, I want to ask you, because you've written a number of posts for us at Living Sober, which we've been so grateful for and fortunate for. And I will link in the intro to this post all the links to your posts. But one of the things that you've written about so beautifully is the kind of acceptance of and settling into being a gentle kind of person with sort of introverted tendencies who maybe, you know, discovers that they like being in small groups or on their own, and that's okay. And, you know, one of the difficult things and a lot of people find this with the drinking, is it's they're sort of doing it to push themselves out there socially and be this and be that and not be who they are. Can you talk a little bit about how that went for you, that kind of accepting and knowing and discovering who you really were in that regard?
I think from being a child, I knew that about myself. I knew I loved going to bed. Like, I loved being in my room, cuddled up in my blankets. I loved reading. But I grew up in a family where that was not acceptable. Like, you had to, there was always these like jokes and fun and parties and games. And if you weren't a good sport and got involved in all of that stuff, then you weren't, that was just not okay. So I kind of knew that, and I kind of pushed myself to be acceptable by being sociable and all of that. And then when I could drink, I never drank much in my 20s or as a teenager, but in my 30s and 40s, that's kind of when I did most of my serious drinking. And definitely, I mean, I don't know whether being introverted kind of made me drink or whether drinking tried to make me extroverted, but however it went, I could cope with being around lots of people. I could cope with parties. I could cope with, big social events with a few drinks. I didn't enjoy it, but I could deal with it. And it seemed to me that during those years, you know, those years when you're single or you're starting a business and you kind of need to network or your career's building up, and to be the person that doesn't go out with your workmates,
it's hard.
That's really hard. So I just did that, and I drank to get through it. And I was kind of fortunate that when I stopped drinking, I was fairly close to retiring. And so I didn't kind of jeopardize my career by kind of pulling back from those things. You know, for a while, I still kept going out, and I'd go to the bar and I'd order a big, a giant bottle of San Pellegrino and drink that. And I'd say to my friends who were like, oh, you stopped drinking, well, that's no fun. And I'd say, well, I'll still go out with you. I just will drink something different. So, you know, I tried that, and it's fine. It's a way, but I really prefer to be, I mean, now, because I've moved a couple of times from New Zealand. I moved to Canada in 2014. And I arrived in a small town where nobody else really knew me. So nobody knew me as a drinker. That was great because I could kind of start all my friendships. I didn't have any friends there. They would drink, but I didn't. That wasn't part of what we did together. You know,
and
we
was
were
it
in
okay
a garden.
Socializing at the there?
Yeah, because I socialized during the day. I was, I never got into the going out. If someone asked me, oh, do you want to go out for a drink? I'd say, actually, I don't drink, but let's meet for a coffee or let's. So I steered the relationships to a place where I was comfortable, and if that didn't work for that person, that was fine. That for me, like, I'd never occurred to me in my life that I could dictate how I related to people. I sort of thought I've got to fit in with whatever's happening. And I realize now I don't. I can have, if I want to only have friends who I do things like go for a morning hike with and have over for a swim in the afternoon and we have a cup of tea and then that's the end of it, it's like, that's perfectly wonderful. I love that. I have relationships now.
Oh, they know they are. Yeah. They're so sort of gentle and connected, those sorts of things. Yeah, the other thing, too, that you've always been really strong on, and I've personally benefited from this, aspect of our friendship, is really focusing on the nourishing things, nourishing things that we do that are seemingly just nothing really, but they add up across a day, a week, a month. And they are the things that really fuel our soul. And I know it's a cliche to talk about self-care, but it makes such a difference. And you've written beautiful, one of my favourite posts you've written for us is the one about be your own best friend.
Oh, right.
You remember that? And just
I remember writing that. I loved writing that. It was just like, wow, yeah, this is really cool.
I still put together my sober, what did you call it? Sober
first aid kit.
first aid kit. Yeah. I'd still do that when I go traveling. But what I'm interested in is, you know, you're 10 years old now, you're living in Mexico, you're retired, you've got this life. What do you do to look after and nourish yourself day to day? Because emotions still come, right? Tricky stuff still happens.
Absolutely.
There's times that are tricky. What do you do to look after yourself in that regard?
Okay, so one of the very big things for me about getting sober was that I could get, I had enough kind of control of my time in my life to get a really good routine in place. And I had super resisted routines. I just thought routines are boring, there's no spontaneity, blah, blah, blah. So I went through this process where I had a lot more time on my hands when I wasn't drinking, a lot more productive time. And I remember one day saying, okay, now that I'm not drinking, what are my health priorities? Like, what do I really want to focus on? So I've got this baseline now where my number one health priority is sleep. So that's I'll just go through them. So there's sleep, digestion, and staying sober. Those are my three focuses. So if I've got anything happening in my life, I consider those things. So if there's an event that's going to start at 11 o'clock, it's easy. I don't go. I don't stay up. Yeah, because my priority is sleep. And if I'm out at a dinner and it's going on and on and people are sitting around talking and it's 11 o'clock or whatever, or it actually never gets to be 11 o'clock for me, but
it's late.
I'm perfectly comfortable at 9 o'clock saying, you know what, guys, it's my bedtime. I'm off. It's been a lovely time. See you next time.
And yes, I go. It gets easier to do that the more you do it, eh?
Oh, yeah. And now everyone expects it of me. In fact, other people sometimes say, oh, it's Sue's bedtime. Let's go. So, you know, that's become a bit of a hallmark for me. So I really look after my sleep. And it's not just going to bed at a reasonable hour. It's making sure I've got really nice sheets. It's making sure I wash my face and do some moisturizer before I go to bed and moisturize my hands. There's nothing worse than being in bed with, like, crusty, dry hands. It makes a huge difference. Have not just like nice pajamas if you wear pajamas, a lovely cup of something, just a small cup of tea or something before you go to bed. So sort of this whole concept of sleep hygiene. Yeah. I also absolutely do not read or look at, I read and I look at YouTube a little bit in the evening, but nothing that outrages me.
Oh, I've gotten bad habits there, Sue. Bad habits. Yeah. I'm doing solitaire on my phone and it's what I'm not, I've got to stop because it is not the good sleep hygiene, I know.
No. And you know, like just putting the lights down in the house, just doing a few things. So the sleep thing is really important. The other thing for me is digestion. Like if I've got my sleep under control and my digestion's fine, I'm really healthy and then I can cope with whatever comes, really. But, you know, I get triggered, I get sidelined much, much less. Man, you know, I think one of the hugest things that's happened for me in the last 10 years is that, you know, you get an emotional trigger and you go into this, like, turmoil and you're really pissed off. And it's like that happens to me maybe once a month now and it lasts for about 5 minutes. I used to be like that every single day. And I would often reach for a drink when I could feel one of those things coming on, like one of these, someone had said something to me or, you know, did something or I read something in the news or, you know, whatever it was that triggered me off. I feel like I have this sort of bigger view of life and who I am and where I am in it. And when I feel those things coming, I kind of know what to do. You know, I know to, like, be aware of my breathing and make a nice cup of tea, sit down, go for a walk, go sit on a rock somewhere, put my feet on the ground, like bare feet on the grass. Or there are sort of like little ways to connect yourself to your own.
And not let this
inner energy
take
like,
over.
Get out of your head. Like, yep. I feel like sometimes I've got this, like, you know, you get these great big thought bubbles, just sort of pull them in, suck them inside, close your eyes, pull them in and take a big deep breath and just kind of know that your body is, it's really capable of holding you and looking after you like a parent, like a loving parent might hold on to a kid. You can kind of do that to yourself. And But you know, that. Like, have some, just get a nice face cloth for your bathroom and wash your face occasionally. I mean, if things are really dodgy in your life, I would say clean your teeth. Just like clean your teeth and wash your face and get some hand cream. A few little physical comfort things like that make a huge difference.
I so agree. And they can't be underestimated. I know they seem like silly little things, but they do make a difference, and it adds up huge. All those little things. I'm interested in what you talk about digestion, because that's not something that we might talk about diet, which is my new thing that I'm
perhaps
angry about.
I mean the same thing. I don't
but
know.
But do you mean you're meaning thinking about the system operating well? It's not that there's goals to do with being super healthy or keto or whatever. It's just about, I like that broader concept of digestion. It's sort of
For me, it's like, you know, when you put something in your mouth, I don't mean to sound weird when I say this, but this is a super intimate act. It doesn't matter what it is. Putting something in your mouth, you're like, you're taking it into yourself. And food and drinks, especially when we're sober, we know you put alcohol in your mouth and you swallow it. This whole cascade of events happens in your body. And you know, I just remember after a few days of not drinking and then after months having this great sense of, wow, my blood's clean. I've got really beautiful, clean blood, and I love that. And I feel the same with food. Like, I'm just aware of what I'm not, I mean, I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. And I often find myself just like chocolate raisins going down pretty seriously. But I try to think about what I'm eating and how that is affecting my body. You know, if I eat one or two potato chips, that's fine. I have a nice time. It feels good. I swallow it. And it's like, oh, yeah, that was a treat. But if I sit there and eat a whole big giant bag of potato chips, I'm going to feel like crap.
Yeah, and it's a little bit of abuse on the body, isn't it?
It's abusive, exactly. And if you can think about, like, just kind of get to know, what is your body like? Like, when I stopped drinking, my digestion changed totally. Like, I think I was really stressing it out with alcohol. And I realized, like every day I really need to have a salad or some raw vegetables. I just need that. And I'm pretty lucky that I don't have allergies and I'm not gluten. I don't need to be gluten free or anything like that. But everything you eat is like an act of care for yourself.
Oh, I love that. So that's going to be really helpful for me, because I won't talk about myself, but it's been a year of sitting on my bum and eating crap. I was interested in that third thing you said, staying sober. That's your other sort of key.
Yeah, that's my other thing. I mean, I don't feel
does
like
that
I'm
mean, at any... I just wanted to ask, does that mean that you're still trying not to drink alcohol? Because surely not after 10 years. What does that mean then, staying sober?
No.
Just that you're being aware of your recovery as an ongoing process?
It just means that I know if I did drink, I'd be back at square one, and I really don't want to be there. I really, for me, not drinking is a super precious part of my life. It's really, really important. And it's more important than a lot of things. You know, like if I was in a relationship where it was like, oh, well, you have to drink with me or you're not my friend. I'm like, fine, see ya. Like, it's a high priority, and I want to never forget. I don't ever want to go back there. So I don't ever want to forget. So it's not my number three. You know, I just keep it there. It doesn't have to be number one anymore. For the first few years, it was totally number one, because I knew that if I drank, then I'd lose so much momentum. Now I felt like I could put it down to number three. I'm safe to do that.
But I
really value it. I know that it underpins my happiness and my sense of satisfaction in my life, and I know how dangerous it would be to, or how stupid it would be just to start. So I remind myself. I don't ever feel like a drink anymore, you know. Whoops.
You are a gift, my friend.
Thank you, darling. I've so enjoyed
connecting with you again, and thank you for coming on the Sobriety Chat.
I'm going to link
to all your blog posts so that some of the newer members who might not have read them before can see how good you are at articulating this stuff in a way that's really practical. That's what I've always loved about your writing, particularly, is the practical nature of it. It gives you concrete tips. You've even done gentle, do you remember chair yoga for us videos?
Yeah, I did.
We've got them on the site.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah. Lotta, if any of your readers or listeners wanted to ask any questions in the, you know, in the comments, I'd be really happy to answer them personally. I mean, you know, if I can be of any help. I kind of stopped writing for Living Style because I felt like I'd said everything I could say, but I forget. Wow. I mean,
if you
know,
ever want to, my friend, I know. I would love. I need a little talk prod. Offline, okay?
Ask me some questions, okay?
Yeah, great. Okay. If you've got any lovely. Questions, do pop them in the put it in the comments section below. But we'll wrap this up now. Thank okay. you so much,
thanks,
my friend.
Lotta.
It's been an absolute joy. I wish you were here with me in Wellington, but I'm really happy that your life's going so well in Mexico. Yeah. Lots of love.
Thank you. Bye.